Hi guys, you're going to have to hang on for just one second. I set my book down someplace and I'm in a new house, and so I have not been able to find it. Give me one sec, I'll be right back. Okay, can you hear me? I'm back. It was hidden under a pair of socks on the dining room table. So my husband was trying to feed me some soup before we started class here. It's been a bit of an adjustment going from Pacific time to Eastern time, and I'm finding myself having to rearrange probably something that needed to be maybe shook up a little bit, which is some routine or pattern. It seems with time you're able to listen at certain times in conjunction with whatever your schedule might be. And now that that's 3 hours different, I find that I'm a little bit more having to pay attention to Eastern time. I'm just not used to it yet. So, yeah. At any rate, okay, we have been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul, which is a joyful path to self-realization. And as you know, it's a series of powerful quotes that were selected by Michael Langford from various people: W. Norman Cooper, Catherine Piedrick, Joel S. Goldsmith, Eva Bell Werber, William Samuel, Elise Morgan, and Ruby Nelson. And we have been reading, starting today. We will be starting on page 172, and that is from Ruby Nelson. And Ruby Nelson has a hang on just a second, let me find the beginning of this section so I can quote the name of that book correctly. The name of the book is The Door of Everything. I haven't picked up Experience Your Perfect Soul since last week, so sometimes my mind goes numb to what was read last week. And I know I think I was supposed to start about three quarters of the page down. Yeah, The Door of Everything. I think that's nice too. But I'm going to start on the previous page, 171, right at the very beginning of a particular piece, and it's called Grand Cosmic Being. The title of that reminds me of Jamiroquai. You guys know who Jamiroquai is? He's a singer, kind of a poppy singer, but kind of fun, jazzy poppy singer. I like him. Okay, here we go. You are too busy with the mundane pastimes of earthly occupations to listen to the call. If you should be still long enough to hear the call, you would most likely hesitate, doubting, thinking it is all too good to be true. And I know when I saw this doubting piece of it, one of our thoughts of awakening this week, Regina spoke to that notion of doubt. There was that notion of doubt. And I don't know which one it was in particular. I've been trying to very much read those many times throughout the course of the day. Some longer than others. Today's in particular, I really haven't even, my attention has definitely been scattered, so it's much more challenging to take it in fully when the attention is not full of it, full of that particular saying, that particular thought, which is a thought of love, a thought of wisdom. Yeah. So again, if you should be still long enough to hear the call, you would most likely hesitate, doubting, thinking it's all too good to be true. If you do not believe my words, try believing in the grand cosmic being. Try feeling its identity inside you, and you will see for yourself. Yeah, it's like, if you don't believe my words, see for yourself, do what's necessary, you know, be still long enough, not just, you know, little snippets here and there throughout the course of a day, but literally taking that time to, you know, sit your butt down in a chair to meditate, or using the loving all meditation in a very conscious way, you know, resting, accepting, and trusting in all things. I mean, there's so many ways that we can be still, not only with our eyes open as well as our eyes closed, to hear that call. So it's like, even if you don't believe that I'm, you know, telling you this with the words that I'm saying to you right now, try to feel it inside you, and then you'll see for yourself. The human side of mind is very reluctant to unlearn the old and reach out for the new, even when the new is the very thing for which it has been yearning. And I can certainly say from this human side of mind, meaning Kathy, the human side of the Kathy mind, I certainly have noticed a very strong reluctance to unlearning the old and reaching out for the new, especially in this situation of having just recently moved, literally moved across the country. So with that, there's always, you know, everything is new. Everything is new. And so there is either that tendency to be open to that, to embrace that, to see it as an opportunity for joy, an opportunity to be happy, an opportunity to ask for guidance, an opportunity to listen, an opportunity to say, I don't know, an opportunity to remember the truth of who I am, an opportunity to let go of building another false, Jacqueline spoke about the acquisition of another false identity. You know, what face will I present to, let's say, the new neighbors or the new people I meet up at the recreation center, or the new people I see maybe on a golf course, or the new people I see, you know, all in everywhere I go. There's that opportunity to be the truth of who I am, to let that shine through, or to stay stuck on the human side of mind, which is reluctant. And that one lesson in particular from Thoughts of Awakening said, fear casts out, rationality. For rationality is of the spirit. And, you know, as I reflected on that and thought about how the mind is experienced, how the body is experienced, how the feelings are experienced when they are gripped in a story of fear or thoughts of fear, it's impossible to be rational. There is no rationality in fear. And fear is that cover over listening to the rational mind. Yeah. And I loved that description that goes on where it says, you know, don't listen to that fear. Don't listen to that fear. Whatever it might be telling you, don't listen to that fear. And then it gives this visual, you know, see it only as a black cloak hanging on a pin. And when I think of a cloak, like a visual in my mind, for some reason, a visual of like, you know, one of those cowboy cloaks comes to me, like almost like a gaucho cloak, like made out of leather, heavy, It's got that apron piece of it on the back, and it's hanging on a pin. How, and you know that a pin cannot possibly support that. So it says, the reason it's hanging there is to cover the light, and all you have to do is willingly pull it down from its place. And I was thinking how easily that would happen if it's simply hanging on a pin. But the reluctance is the strength within that little tiny pin that keeps new learning from presenting itself within the fresh mind. You know, the very thing we say we want. Because we want, we admit, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But there's some sense of fear around knowing, a knowing that is beyond a present intellect understanding. So the hardest task that the surface mind must face is the task of unlearning ideas universally accepted as truth and taking on such implausible ideas as belief in unlimited powers and eternal life for all. I always have loved that piece early on in A Course in Miracles where Jesus says, you can literally move mountains. You can literally move mountains. And so often I heard that, at least in Course circles, poo-pooed as if that was not to be taken literally. And that always made me laugh within myself. Here's Jesus using the word literally, a very explicit word, literally. Take this literally. Don't try to, like Michael Langford says, don't try to argue with it or change it or make it seem different than it is or interpret it as other than what it is. Literally means literally. Take it exactly as I'm giving it to you. And still we argue. Yeah, because it seems like an implausible idea, does it not? I can literally move mountains. The mind of God. You should be glad to let those threadbare opinions fall away for the sake of something better. There are the same opinions, with variations here and there, that have been clung to, passed around, and handed down from generation to generation, without much added enlightenment. And so going back to what Reverend Jacqueline spoke about this morning, and Karen Worth started our meditation this morning, asking us to settle into looking at everything that is before the acquisition of an opinion, this threadbare opinion, this old learning, this false identity, this doubting, this persona or personas, this piling on that is a daily burden to maintain an identity that can never be real and serves to mask this light, this grand cosmic being that gives unlimited power, has given unlimited power. It's accomplished, done. I am the accomplished. I am eternal life. I am unlimited powers. This is not universally accepted as truth. It's often seen as being grandiose, pompous, arrogant. Who do you think you are? And yet, when we accept the truth of who we really are, there comes with it this humble. And the word gratitude was used today, and I was reflecting on that for a moment because, at least in my experience, gratitude is generally linked to gratitude for a something. Again, that it is still associated with an I, and as Barb was doing through Robert Adams' work, doing some self-inquiry about who is that I that has an objective goal and is seeking to fulfill it sometimes from outside of itself. What is that relationship? What is there to that I need to gain acquisition of, get, attain, do? And yet there is hopefully a point or an apex point where this I that I recognize as Kathy, the human being, the persona, is relaxed about the role and accepts with grace what is as it is, but the attention's more willingly focused with the I am, which is still a consciousness that is not before, in that what I'm going to call in Regina's description of the first principle of God, which is the absolute. And that's what Karen Worth was, at least as far as I was understanding it, referring to the I practice, where we take what is normally, at least in my experience, but less so these days, where attention is focused outwardly, and we redirect that attention back to stillness, back to before thought, back to pure, without judgment, without opinion, without anything, just silent quietness. Out of the human side of mind, the surface mind, and we sink into a fresh space. Okay, back to the reading. You should be glad to let those threadbare opinions fall away for the sake of something better. They are the same opinions, with variations here and there, that have been clung to, passed around, and handed down from generation to generation without much added enlightenment. It makes me think of that song by Sting, "History Teaches Nothing." We just go round and round and round. The practice has been to accept whatever ideas you are exposed to accept the ways of the ancestors, more or less, and not to question them at all. History bears witness to the fact that few of your ancestors understood the message of eternal life. Yeah, just like I said, just exactly what Sting says in that song, history teaches nothing. And Michael Langford has told us, we've, you know, there's been just thousands of wars. If we were learning from spiritual wisdom, would we keep warring with one another, within ourselves? Why look to their methods, expecting these methods to benefit you any more than they benefited them? You know, why do we keep studying the past that did not work? You know, if we could acknowledge, hey, this didn't work, let's not do that again, and stick with that. But to try it again, acting like it's going to have some sort of different effect? We all know that's nuts. That's insanity. Excuse me. Yeah. Spirit is potent, potent. Wait a minute. I missed something. Let me go back. Okay, again, history bears witness to the fact that few of your ancestors understood the message of eternal life. Why look to their methods, expecting these methods to benefit you any more than they benefited them? Withdrawal from race beliefs is the first important step if you wish to shift your center of consciousness. Withdrawal from race beliefs is the first important step if you wish to shift your center of consciousness. And you know, we could certainly contribute in a very compassionate and positive way on the worldly level by examining within our own mind our own race beliefs. Our own race beliefs, not what we see on the screen of the world, which, at least from my observation, has been screaming a very distracting story of race, and using that as an apex of division. A point of focus rather than looking beyond to the truth within. What is the truth within? What is the picture, if you want to use that? What is the inward picture? What is that message saying to me? What is the heart revealing beyond the outward picture? What is the message there? What am I looking for? What do I want to see here? And if I discover with honesty within my own mind and really take responsibility for whatever those beliefs might appear as, or how they might appear, or the words that might arise, or the pictures that might come to mind, or those that I might see as showing me very clearly my own sins, quote, sins. I can use that witness as a tool to ask to see differently, to be shown what is I'm to learn here, past this past history conditioning. That hasn't worked. Why would I listen to that again? Instead, I request the truth. Instead, I give over this instant and let someone else be in charge. Let the right mind tell me what it is I am to see here, what it is I am to say here, what it is I am to do in this instance. Be silent, just quiet, listening, waiting for that shift in consciousness. That's what A Course in Miracles calls a miracle presents itself, because you've, you know, shut up long enough that you allow that opportunity to arise. So it says spirit is potent. Potent. And not one single organism can open to receive it and remain unchanged. And that's the miracle. That is the shift, the change. That's given. It's given by my request. And the direct experience of it is where we get that, you know, like shot of juice. The juiciness of grace that sometimes bringing you to tears, witness the potency of, you know, the gift of being able to actually hear and believing it to be true and without doubt. Sorry. Let me shut this off. I love that. Spirit is potent, and not one single organism can open to receive it and remain unchanged. I like that it says not one single organism. That makes me sort of think of like an amoeba, you know, something as small as like an amoeba. Life appearing, you know, in every single form we can possibly imagine is life. Life actually is the appearance within awareness. I, as persona, do not contain consciousness. It's not that way. Consciousness is like the vessel. Even though that's, you know, again, words are, it's completely open. It's not bound in any way, but everything is within that. Life emanates from that. Is that, as that. Even now, a few of you are beginning to know your grand cosmic self. You have been introduced to yourself as you studied the teachings of my word. You have taken this unspeakable revelation into your reservoir of feeling, cherished it in silence, and guarded it from all dark forces while it began to grow toward maturity. And it has been an untouchable, indescribable thing. A glow in your interior, like a bright star caught inside some tunnel, and you've been unable to share it, knowing full well that it can never be reduced to the dullness of intellectual ideas. Wow, how cool is that? And I was thinking, you know, guarded it from all dark forces. And right away, what came to mind was the way or the means to guard that is to be mindful, to not let my guard down as far as watching the appearance of thought as it is, allowing it to be as it is, but not attaching to that. Watching each opportunity as the opportunity to see grace, to listen, to be guided, to ask for direction, to rest, to let go. You know, it's like a lot of our meditation practices in awareness, watching awareness, tell us simply to, you know, don't get bent out of shape about the fact that you have thoughts. Just turn away from them. Don't give them any power by paying attention to them. That's all. And that's how we, you know, guard ourselves, how we cherish the golden silence, how we turn towards unspeakable revelation, that which, you know, is wordless. And the very practice of turning in that direction is the opportunity for that revelation. So yeah, and then we have the, you know, the direct experience of that, the joy that comes from the direct experience of that. And then there's that contrast piece of it where the dullness of intellectual ideas, you know, we notice that. It's not about wanting to study the word so much. It's like, oh, there's that, at least for me, I've had so many times where I feel so over the words. I just want to rest in the silence, literally just sit with the silence, literally just be quiet. Turn that way. And I like that that last piece of the quiet thought number four. Listen not to your fear, whatever it may be telling you. See it as only a black cloak hanging on a pin to cover the light. Willingly pull it down from its place. Fear cannot harm you. And light is the presence of yourself. Light is the presence of yourself. And that's speaking to, you know, the truth of who you are, your real self. And this is talking about the dark forces. So if there is some sort of an experience of dark forces, whether that's a feeling you have, your spiritual intuition, your listening to your conscience in a conscious way, you're not just feeling a victim of that voice in the mind that is generally screaming at you, like we see in Revolver, I say, you do, you know, that voice. We're not so fooled by that voice anymore. There's more that noticing of that voice, seeing that it's there, but taking away the force of it, the darkness of it, taking the guard down and not fearing that it can be murderous, that it can control me, that it can steer me down a dark path. There's enough of the introduction to this self that I really am, the I am self, the untouchable self, the indescribable self, that glowing self, that bright star self that no longer feels, you know, completely lost in the tunnel. And Karen Worth used a beautiful meditation example where she said, you know, you imagine yourself in a completely pitch black room, or you can't even see your hand. You can see nothing. You can see nothing. And someone says, is my book in there? And you say, I don't know. Because, of course, you can't see a thing. It's pitch black. And then they say, are you in there? And of course you say, yes, I'm in here. And how do you know that? You can't see yourself. How do you know? I am. That's the light. That's the light. This light, I love that. This light is the presence of yourself. And I thank you, Karen Worth, for, yes, I'm sorry. Is anybody else having any trouble hearing me? Am I too, oh no. Okay, hopefully, Maisie? Okay, I'll just continue. Nobody seems to be experiencing too much problem with the sound. Yeah. So again, and it has been an untouchable, indescribable thing, a glow in your interior, like a bright star caught inside some tunnel, and you have been unable to share it, knowing full well that it can never be reduced to the dullness of intellectual ideas. The full realization of your true identity, your master pattern, does not suddenly burst upon you until the seed of truth has been planted, nourished, cherished, and allowed to mature to ripeness. It's funny because this picture of planting the seed of truth, today, one of the reasons I was a bit scattered this morning during everyone's sharing was that we had a delivery of some of our belongings that were not delivered with the first truck that we had. And it's not that we had a ton of stuff. It's that the truck that we hired was not did not figure the amount of stuff that we had in relation to the size of their truck, and therefore we had more stuff that needed to be left behind. And 2 weeks later, this fella pulled up with some of our stuff and still forgot a portion of it at his garage in San Diego. And so this acquisition, again, acquiring things and thinking that there's some the reason I bring that up is because there were plants. And so I was transplanting and adding soil and nourishing and bringing them out of darkness and giving them a chance at new life and lovingly giving them a chance, period. And that's what this is saying about the seed of truth. You know, we have to give it a chance. We have to give it a chance. And one of the ways that we give it a chance is to rest in stillness. To literally move away from the busyness of distraction. The times when we engage in activities that in the end will mean absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. They do nothing for us. They're simply distractions. So the full realization of your true identity, your master pattern, does not suddenly burst upon you until the seed of truth has been planted, nourished, cherished, and allowed to mature to ripeness. This does not take thousands of years. It does not take hundreds. It may take only a few short years, a few months, a few weeks, depending entirely upon your attitude and intensity. And often the word earnestness is also used. How earnest am I? What is my purpose? What is it I really want? Is watching tennis more important than meditating? Is shopping, getting a great deal, more important than focusing my attention inward? I mean, I could list a zillion things. We each have to be self-honest, and not with any sense of guilt. That's not the point. But again, going back to, you know, what is it I truly want? Just being honest with ourselves, because if there's a lie involved in your own mind about what it is you really want, there's so much conflict that comes with that. If you don't really want mind death or mananasa or full awakening, just be okay with that. If you just want to be peaceful more often and work towards that, so be it. But if you're telling yourself you want a complete mind death, and that's not really the case, there will be conflict within the mind because there is a divided goal. It's not really what you want. You're just saying that. You're lying to yourself. And also, I think it was Jacqueline that spoke to the idea that, you know, there's an unwillingness to accept what A Course of Love calls the accomplished, is that it's already done, of course. I mean, it's already been accomplished. You already are perfect. That was, you know, our very first, was it the very first one? No, I don't think it was the first one. The, yeah, number two, the second thought of awakening was, you are perfect as you are. To trust this thought is to trust me. And that thought says the same thing. I mean, your perfection has been accomplished. It's done. You are perfect. You are the accomplished. Are you really, really taking that in, or are you doubting that? Do you think there's, you know, something else that you have to acquire, to do, to accept someplace off in the future, which we know doesn't even exist, another concept we don't question, another delay mechanism, another distraction that now says it's not available in this present moment, right now. Another limit on that unlimitedness that is the truth of who we are. Again, from this thoughts of number two, our thoughts of contemplation, you are perfect as you are. To trust this thought is to trust me, to trust me. And it seems sometimes like we want to see that me as an other me, someone other than me. I mean, we might think of an image of Jesus, or an image of Buddha, or an image of Ramana, or an image of Nisargadatta, or an image of something other than me. Are there two me's? One to be trusted, one to not trust? Who is the untrustworthy me? Is there such a thing? And then the injunction is, rest quietly. Rest quietly. That's the instruction. There's no like big deal. It's not like we can't figure out what to do. It's not anything like that. Rest quietly within this thought today that you're perfect as you are. When a thought that seems different crosses your mind, recognize that you must be perceiving wrongly. And let the thought go. Isn't that the same instruction that Michael Langford gives us in awareness, watching, awareness meditation? You know, when you notice a thought arise, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't turn it into some big thing and get all attached to it, and, or start beating up on yourself and add more thoughts to it. Just, you know, let it go. And go back to you're perfect as you are. Trust this thought. That's to trust in yourself. And nobody's saying that can't be right now. Again, this is telling us this doesn't take thousands of years. It doesn't take hundreds of years. It takes only, sometimes it only takes a few short years. A few months, a few weeks, depending entirely upon your attitude and your intensity. How much do I really want this? How earnest am I? And, you know, we can tell how earnest we are by what we do. It's pretty simple. Look at what you do every day. And there's always room for improvement on the attitude, that's for sure. So as long as you are intent only on the purposes of your human selfhood, the web of sub-creation will continue to grow up around you, blinding you to reality. The web of sub-creation. That for me, an image comes into the mind, or the words from A Course in Miracles, and I think I've said this before, bands of steel with iron overlaid is the image that comes to me, that sense of, you know, a prison house within your own mind, and the thoughts become the bands of steel, and that resistance that it talked about on the previous page to wanting to withdraw from our beliefs, to shift from the center of consciousness being focused outward to that old way of thinking, to that reluctance to unlearn the old. When we see all of that on the surface of the mind, that's why it calls it the surface mind, that human selfhood piece of ourself. If that's our only intent, we will experience that prison house. We will imprison ourselves over and over and over again. History teaching nothing. And that is that black cloak that was talked about in one of our, again, number four, I think it was. Yeah, fear casts out rationality. That's the purpose of human selfhood, to cast out rationality. That is the web of sub-creation. There is no rationality there. It's all irrational. And if we try to find rationality there, we are denying spirit. Spirit is rational. It says you'll experience light by listening to spirit. A lightness of being. And even A Course in Miracles speaks of light episodes even. There may be an experience of seeing a light episode. So it can be physical. It can appear in a zillion different ways as witness to reality. But if our intention is stuck on the purposes that you know, personhood or me, I, what I want, what I desire, what I need, all about a me, personhood, that web of sub-creation is that cloak that hides the true self. And that cloak is just hanging on a little pin. And all I have to do is give my willingness to let it be removed and see that fear cannot harm me and that light is my present presence. That's it. This relinquishing of your surface self. Jacqueline called it, you know, acquisition of, where you're acquiring something, wanting to get something, to gain something. It's this, you know, frenetic motion because you don't see yourself as perfect, as already accomplished, as already the treasure, the all that is. So this is saying this relinquishing of your surface self may take a lot of effort. You know, why? Like Jacqueline said, There's conditioning. We have been added onto from that pure state that Karen Worth asks us to reflect on in meditation. Go back to that pure state before words, before language, before opinion, before beliefs, before attitude, before intensity, before human selfhood, before purposes. All of that. Go back. This relinquishing of your surface self may take a lot of effort. It may be enough to keep you occupied for quite some time if you are a victim of deep-seated habit. And I can say for myself that I have definitely experienced being occupied with deep-seated habits. But there's also that willingness to have it be shown to me, to let it go, to recognize that it's not working for me, to ask myself, is kindness my purpose in this situation? Is kindness what I'm seeing in this brother? Is kindness my attitude toward myself? Is kindness my purpose right now? And I think Regina may have referred to that as like conscious kindness, where you're not doing it, you're not grateful, you're grateful for the decision, the decision, I guess it's the decision just to be kind, because you're grateful for the experience of it. You have the direct experience of that kindness. It's really not about an other. They may be the beneficiary of some of that, but it's really about giving to yourself, which is giving to your brother, which is giving to the universe, which is giving, plain and simple. That's what kindness is. It's giving. But our deep-seated habits, you know, sometimes keep us from, we want to see gratitude, particularly as being grateful for stuff, grateful that somebody did what I wanted them to do, grateful that things went my way, grateful that I have you friends here in this room, grateful for, you know, again, that outward expression of objectivity, instead of grateful to, in direct experience, really know the truth of myself. And that's enough. That silence, that wisdom, that pureness, that unfluffed presence of being is such a joyful, direct experience. That's what the gratitude becomes all about. That's how it feels to me, at least, that's what I want to know gratitude as. So show me, Father, that might be my direct experience. It says, but you will be richly rewarded if you can cast away old patterns of thought and old habits of doubt. And that word cast, there it is again, because that's exactly the word that's used in the thought of awakening number 4. Fear casts out rationality, for rationality is of spirit. And fear doesn't, you know, want you to be rational. It wants you to be fearful. And when you're in fear, you're not rational. It says, listen not to your fear. Listen not to your fear. Whatever it may be telling you. Whatever it may be telling you. See it as only a black cloak hanging on a pin to cover the light. Willingly pull it down from its place. Fear cannot harm you, and light is the presence of yourself. And, you know, when I reflected on that, when I contemplated that, I took that to mean many things, this sense of light. Light can be that just sense of lightness within the body, a body lightness, where we notice a fear thought and maybe there's even a sensation and the sensation is seemingly unpleasant or oftentimes when there's fear, I get like this zing of electricity almost. And so there can be that noticing of something and we can turn away from that. We can actually say, that came from a thought. And I know that that cannot be a reflection of my truth. So my attention must be focused someplace outside of myself on something that is not real. And I can, in fact, turn away from that and not pay attention to that right now. I can pull that cloak right off that pin and let the light in. Let the light in. Light is the presence of yourself. Pay attention to yourself. Yourself deserves your true. Your true self deserves your attention. Number 88, and the most direct means to eternal bliss. So when we see the fear, oh man, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Thank you for reminding me the time. It really did get away from me. And I'm done. I'm done. That worked out perfectly well. That was the very end of that piece. I ended on page 175, and I will be starting at the top of page 175 next week. Thanks, guys, for listening. Yeah, and have a great day. Giving up the mic.